This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try.
A lucky Saturday if you happen to have triskaidekaphilia. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and welcome to Free Thought Radio.
Is that a word, triskaidekaphilia? Triskaidekaphobia is the fear of the number 13, and this is the October 13th, 2012 broadcast of Free Thought Radio. I suppose you're all non-superstitious people would have or might have triskaidekaphilia. I'm Dan Barker, and this is Free Thought Radio, which is radio for the rest of us. Radio as secular as our Constitution. This show is produced in Madison, Wisconsin. We also broadcast in Columbia, Missouri, and other cities in Grand Rapids and in Ithaca, New York, in Monterey, California, and, of course, podcasts throughout the entire natural universe.
Free Thought Radio is the weekly production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which is the group that Dan and I co-direct. And we hope not someday, but today, you will join our 501c3 educational charity. And we are serving as the nation's largest association, North America's largest association of free thinkers, atheists and agnostics, over 19,000. And we work to keep religion out of government, have about 10 lawsuits going. And we have 4 staff attorneys working diligently to end violations without having to go to court.
Today, we're going to have some good news to report and then some not so good news to report. But it seems like even after more than 3 decades of working at the foundation, although things have improved for freethinkers, a lot of things are still the same. As Annie Laurie told you, we are both co-presidents of the foundation since 2004. I came on in 87 full-time. You came on way back in the 70s, and we're going to listen to a movie today that was produced in 1980 by the Freedom From Religion Foundation that could actually be played today. You'll hear a young Annie Laurie, and you'll hear news about what's going on at that time.
And Dan, what were you doing back in 1980? When we were putting out A Second Look at Religion and working for Free Thought, what were you up to?
I was the enemy. I was out there preaching. I was part of the religious right that you were working against at that time. So
we're going to play. It's in 3 segments. That's coming up. And although some things never change, you know, the religious right and theocrats, we are finding that the free thought figures in this country are changing very dramatically. And I'm sure you all celebrated the news this week by Pew. A lot of the headlines were that Protestant Americans are in decline, but the real news is that non-religious continue to grow. Now we're 1 in 5, according to the figures that just came out this week from Pew. And this is seismic. That's 5 years ago, we had about 15% of adults claiming no religion, and that used to be 7%. Now we see that more than 1/3 of those who are 18 to 22 are religiously unaffiliated, and the nuns are now the nation's second largest religious grouping.
Nuns, you mean in?
N-O-N-E.
The nuns.
Following the group that has the nuns, N-U-N-S. Huh. After Catholics, atheists and agnostics, unaffiliated non-religious are the second largest segment of the population. And this is major, major, very good news.
And one indication of that is the fact that 6 years ago, the Freedom From Religion Foundation was half the size it is today. We have had phenomenal growth in the last 6 years.
Now, what do we have up first? That there's some national news and some FFRF news, and we're going to do a little mix of that before we go to
Well, Pennsylvania, you know, we've reported in the past that our attorneys have written letters to Pennsylvania school districts about prayer and the Lord's Prayer in public schools. And there's a public school in Greencastle, Antrim, which has been publicly praying, and they fought our letter, they fought our law, our claim, our legal claim. But they finally changed their mind. And there's no news story this week, but they're here. Here's a little bit of the board itself squirming as they have to announce that they're going to stop the Lord's Prayer.
A tradition for several decades, the Lord's Prayer has been a regular part of board meetings. Last meeting, after consultation with our solicitor, the board made the decision to change our protocol and begin the meeting with a moment of silence. In 2011, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals, whose jurisdiction includes Pennsylvania, ruled that board-led school prayer at meetings was not permitted, therefore unconstitutional in nature. While we as a board and a community may strongly disagree with these decisions, the law currently states that we, Board of School Directors, are not permitted to lead the Lord's Prayer at school at board meetings.
I'm surprised he didn't break down in tears, but this is the third school board in a month that has stopped illegal Christian and sectarian prayer at school board meetings, public school board meetings, thanks to letters written by Rebecca Markert on behalf of FFRF.
And that's in Pennsylvania. Some other good news out of Pennsylvania is that a Pennsylvania representative, her name is Babette Joseph, when called on to lead the legislature in the Pledge of Allegiance, she refused, and they got this on tape. Listen to her being called on by actually a right-wing Christian who kind of knew that she was going to refuse it. This is Representative Babette Joseph.
Could I ask Representative Joseph to lead us in the pledge?
Thank you. I do not pledge the flag of the allegiance based on my First Amendment rights and the fact that I really think it's a prayer, and I don't pray in public.
And then when she was asked to explain why, here's what she said.
How many years ago was 1954? I have not said the Pledge of Allegiance since, and I will not say it into the future, unless they take those words out and make it less of a prayer.
Okay, and so good news. Now, we want to talk about some bad news, and this is being pre-recorded because Dan and I are at the largest FFRF convention we've ever held. It's in Portland. We have almost 900 people, and so this is being recorded a little early, but terrible news about the Taliban gunning down a 14-year-old girl in Pakistan because she was a symbol of favoring education for girls. And as we are recording this, we don't know whether she has survived or not. She was shot twice, once in the head, once in the neck. Two other girls shot in the attack where the masked Taliban entered a school bus directly to kill this 14-year-old as a symbol of women's equality. Terrible news. We also saw the good news that Sandusky got 30 to 60 years for sex abuse, and this was largely a Catholic cover-up, and he is still in big-time denial. We also saw that we have one Catholic man guiding the fight against gay marriage, and that's Frank Schubert. And his organization is spending this fall $12.5 million to fight marriage equality. But next to him is the Catholic Conference of Bishops in Minnesota, spending $1 million to fight marriage equality. This is the harm of religion. And we also had a
story about a priest who's
a bishop in Chile who was accused of abuse and quit, admitting imprudent act.
So stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. And after the break, we're going to talk about the 1980 movie. It's called A Second Look at Religion. And as you listen to it, see if you can compare 1980 with today. Stay tuned for more radio as secular as our Constitution.
The things that you're liable to read in the Bible, it ain't necessarily so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are co-directors of the Freedom from Religion Foundation. And what we're going to air now is the audio from a 1980 film, FFRF's first film called A Second Look at Religion. I'm in it. I have a cameo.
How old were you then?
I was 24. I had just graduated from college. I was a late bloomer. And Ann Gaylor, who was the president of Freedom from Religion Foundation, my mother, a couple from Madison, and Ruth Hermans Green. And this was the summer before she died. And she's great. This is 1980.
And in 1980, the foundation had about 1,000 members. Today, we have almost 20,000. So a lot has changed, except some of the issues.
But not religion. So I think here is a second look at religion.
The program you are about to see is historic. Most of you, for the first time, will be seeing a film that is critical of religion. You will hear people tell why they left their churches, why they no longer believe in religion. You will hear, for the first time, criticism of the Bible. The Freedom from Religion Foundation presents A Second Look at Religion. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, woe to the bloody city! I will even make the pile for fire great. Heap on wood, kindle the fire, consume the flesh, and spice it well, and let the bones be burned. Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with stretched forth necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and making a tinkling with their feet. Therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret part. Wherefore, if thy hand or thy foot offend thee, cut them off and cast them from thee. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. Any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brethren and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And the Lord said unto Moses, take all the heads of the people and hang them up before the Lord against the sun.
Many people are shocked and offended by passages from the Bible. They are distressed by the dark words of Jesus. This is why kind individuals object to the Bible's use in public ceremonies and why they are opposed to prayers and Bible reading in the public schools. I'm a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, an educational foundation working for the absolute separation of state and church. Those of us who work for separation of state and church would be quite content simply to work for that constitutional principle and remain silent on the subject of the shortcomings of religion. But we find, unhappily, that religionists are not willing to accept our premise that it is constitutionally proper and eminently wise to keep religion out of government. How can you object to prayers in the legislature, they ask? Why shouldn't we have tax money for our parochial schools? And why don't you want the Bible used in public ceremonies? So, we who work for separation of state and church in this country are also forced to talk about religion, to discuss the merits of the Bible. The Bible is probably the most available, most purchased, and least read book in the world. It is the best seller that is rarely opened. Since most religionists have not read the Bible for themselves and are familiar only with those palatable passages their clergy wish them to hear, they're unprepared for any Bible criticism. Criticism of religion in this country has often been stifled. Even in liberal communities, criticism of the Bible is frequently censored. To help one critic's voice be heard, our foundation has published a book, The Born Again Skeptic's Guide to the Bible. It was written by Ruth Hermans Green, a grandmother and foundation member from Missouri. Ruth, I know you were a churchgoer for over half a century. What happened? What changed your mind?
You might say I was a half-hearted Methodist. I wasn't happy or comfortable with religion. I wasn't totally committed. I had doubts, I just didn't deal with them. What led me to my present commitment was a suggestion by a relative that the Bible might not be all that I thought it was. And this suggestion led me to investigate for myself. I read the Bible with an open mind. I was ready to accept it. But I hadn't gotten very far into it before I saw that it was very different from what I had imagined it to be.
Different in what way, Ruth?
Well, I've been taught that the Bible was a good book, an inspirational book. And I can remember singing a song in church about those wonderful words of life. And these were the words that I expected to find. Instead, I found a record of, how shall I put it, such superstitious silliness and ignorance, such moral obscenities, and such ghastly atrocities as I'd never even imagined. I found the Bible personalities, God's favorites, and even God himself to be utter reprobates. In this book, where I'd expected to find ethical guidelines, every kind of behavior that was repugnant to me was glorified and rewarded, even perpetrated and commanded by God himself. I felt betrayed. I was outraged that this book should be excerpted in this way and misrepresented.
You say you felt betrayed. How was that?
Well, after all, I've been more or less exposed to this book all my life without knowing that hardly anyone in it, God included, could serve as a role model for a reputable person who didn't want to end up in prison or on death row. It was this kind of disillusionment that led me to say I detested the Bible. As Thomas Paine said, he detested it in the Age of Reason. There wasn't one page of this book that didn't offend me in some way. In fact, after a session of reading it, I always wanted to go and take a bath in Grandma's Lysol. If there is human or divine behavior that is too vile to merit description, you'll find it in this book.
What specific instances shocked you the most?
I think God's behavior offended me the most. After all, I thought it would be beyond reproach. But the Bible tells me that this Lord of the whole universe comes down to this little speck of earth and picks out a small group of warring tribes to be his favorites. Now, he doesn't do anything but hover over them and live among them for 4,000 years. He despises everybody else in the world because they have other gods. And he makes his chosen people despise everybody else, too.
You have said that the Bible is a book that shouldn't be given to children. Why do you say that, Ruth?
I feel deeply that immature minds should not be exposed to the Bible for several reasons. After all, this book is supposed to be the perfect behavior guide. But instead, it's full of violence and depravity and twisted morality. After all, if we tell our children that it's a beautiful act to cause your own child to be killed to appease your anger, I don't know what we can teach them that's reprehensible. And this leads me into my main objection, which is that I don't think children should be exposed to the terrors of the Christian religion. I say this from my own experience. When I was growing up, I didn't like the awful Bible stories. I was terrified many hours that the end of the world was coming. I shuddered at any mention of torture or the crucifixion. I still feel that way today. Easter was a time of horror for me. I wanted to retire from the world. I feel sad that this Christian torture symbol, the cross, is being imposed more and more upon our landscape and even worn as jewelry. And often there's a suffering, bleeding figure attached to it. I don't think we would tolerate this replica of a hangman's noose being used in this way. I think this whole thing is brutalizing. This emblem of suffering and shame that old hymn used to talk about, or that we used to sing about, is pictured as something beautiful, when actually it's just a grisling holdover from the old pagan superstition that the gods had to be appeased with human sacrifice.
And that's the film, A Second Look at Religion, and that is Ruth Green talking, and we'll come back after the break to listen to more of Ruth and the rest of that movie, the 1980 movie produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And Ruth Green wrote a book called The Born Again Skeptic's Guide to the Bible, which is the foundation's best-selling book to this
day. It's still selling, and it's a great resource, very entertaining, but very educational. One chapter for each topic about what's wrong with the Bible.
So when we come back, we'll hear the rest of her talk, and then we'll listen to Annie Laurie Gaylor as a 24-year-old recent college graduate talking about a second look at religion.
As Mark Twain said, faith is believing what you know ain't so. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we do hope someday you will join us, become a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, working to keep state and church separate and to educate the public about the views of those of us who do not believe.
And members of the Freedom From Religion Foundation really get a good deal for their tax-deductible membership. We send out a 24-page or larger tabloid newspaper 10 times a year, edited by Bill Dunn, full of information about not only what FFRF is doing, but freethinkers in general, a great way to stay in touch. And we also have publications, including The Born Again Skeptic's Guide to the Bible, written by Ruth Hermance Green. We were right in the middle of the interview from FFRF's first film, A Second Look at Religion.
I never got to meet Ruth. She died that next year.
She died in 1981, and she was a lovely, lovely person.
But she lives on.
She lives on in her book, in this film. And also, she's the one who coined the term, freedom depends on freethinkers. Also, there was a time when religion ruled the world. It is known as the Dark Ages. Very sharp cookie. And why don't we go back to this interview? This is Sheila Thompson interviewing Ruth Hermance Green in A Second Look at Religion.
In fact, Paul says that without shedding of blood is no remission. I don't think that children should be taught these old superstitions of human sacrifice and ghosts and devils and demonology and exorcism and signs and wonders. I think these are horrors of the past and we should bury them. Our children shouldn't be made to eat the body of a god or drink his blood, however symbolically. Of course there are good teachings, some good teachings in the Bible. It would be strange if there weren't, considering the number of people who contributed to it and the length of it. But I think that hunting out good behavior in the Bible is like wading through a sewer to find a gem. We shouldn't have to sift our morality from a book, one of whose main themes is the sacrifice of innocent animals and human beings. There are superior teachings in other books. They're all lined up in your library shelves.
But Ruth, what do you say to those people who think that the Bible is a book about love?
I studied every page of this book, and I didn't find enough love to fill a salt shaker. God is not love in the Bible. God is vengeance from Alpha to Omega. He doesn't any more than get people created until he curses them and withdraws from them. And he finally comes up with a plan whereby he's going to damn most of them forever.
Do you mean God actually did this on purpose?
Yes, deliberately. He is the potter who molds the clay to honor and dishonor, which totally nullifies any free will. Jesus says that the way, the understanding, is deliberately withheld even from people who want to know it. And he knows that his plan of salvation is going to be damnation for most of the people in the world, because he says, "Great is the gate, and narrow is the way, and few there be that find it." Predestination is taught all through the New Testament. It makes it very clear that the names of those who are saved are already written in the Book of Life from the beginning of the world. And not only is this not love, I think it is the most diabolical unfairness that was ever taught or devised.
Say, Ruth, what does the Bible have to say about the Christian family we hear so much about today?
Personally, I think the Christian family should be called a Christian fantasy. When the Lord sets up the sexual system, he's very interested in multiplying, but he says nothing at all about the family as a nuclear unit. In fact, he decimates families every time he has a chance. Jesus is rude to his mother and his siblings. He denies his family. He doesn't marry your father's children, and he makes the disciples abandon their families. He says that anyone who wants to follow him must forsake all their loved ones and everything that they have. He never once uses the word family. In fact, that word appears just once in the New Testament. Besides, sex is sinful in the Bible. Women defile men. I just don't see how that attitude is very conducive to producing families.
You've told audiences, Ruth, that the Bible is a dangerous book. Why?
The Bible is one of 27 holy books, all written by human beings. If you can make people believe in a God and then convince them that this God revealed himself in a book, call that the Word of God, you have a very powerful tool. And you're not about to relinquish that book. You're going to make it unassailable. And we may not be dragged out of our beds and burned at the stake anymore, but we're still in danger from this book, because it's still being used to influence our laws, to deny people their equal rights and freedom of choice. I feel that the Bible is a grab bag. I call it a behavior grab bag, because it can be reached into for justification of any kind of behavior, of any kind of crusade or vendetta against any group or person that you want to make your target. There was a song popular several years ago. You may not remember it, but it was called The Three Little Words. Now, these were nice words. I love you. But the three little words that I hate to hear most today, that I dislike to hear the most, are, the Bible says, just let somebody say something sensible or a reasonable conclusion you arrived at, and someone pops up with the words, but the Bible says. I feel that we should stop wasting our time trying to please the supernatural and concentrate on improving the welfare of human beings. I think that we should use our energy and our initiative to solve our problems and stop relying on prayer and wishful thinking. I believe that if we have faith in ourselves, we won't have to have faith in God.
Ruth Green's second look at religion resulted in her exposé of the Bible. Others who take a second look at religion find themselves living more restrictive religions. One of these is Mary Weinberger, who grew up in rural Wisconsin and never missed Mass. Today, Mary, an atheist, is a registered nurse and works in a university hospital caring for women who have abortions. She is married to an attorney, Howard Glick. Mary, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
For the first 20 years of my life, I was a strict Catholic. I grew up in a small town in northern Wisconsin. I was often called Mary the Good because I was very well behaved and a good Catholic girl. I never missed Sunday Mass, and I even had aspirations about becoming a nun.
As a child, did you ever doubt the things you were taught?
Yes, but the nuns and priests just told me to pray hard to make the doubts go away. They said the most important goal in life was to make it into heaven. In the long run, nothing else really mattered.
What was the result of your studying other religions?
I realized that the other religions did not make any more sense than Catholicism. I realized I was Catholic merely because I was brought up that way.
So how did you break away?
One day I decided I would miss Sunday Mass and deliberately commit my first mortal sin. A mortal sin, according to the Catholic Church, is such a grave offense that if you die before confessing it, you will go straight to hell.
How did your family react?
They were really upset. My mother said I should come home right away and talk to one of the local priests. She also said I should see a psychiatrist.
What happened then?
I waited 2 weeks, and then I decided I would go back to church to see how I would feel. I remember standing there in the pew, trying to pray and follow the Mass, but I just could not do it. I just did not believe those things anymore. I got up and I walked out, and I never went back. To this day, I still feel the best decision I ever made was to quit the Catholic Church.
Does atheism provide a basis for morality?
Atheism is no more or less than the absence of a belief in the existence of God. Atheists are free to search for and find a true basis for morality in the real world using their rational minds.
What are the consequences of basing morality on religion?
Well, throughout history, religion has done far more harm than good. War, murder, torture, slavery, racism, and sexism have all been practiced in the name of God. It is religionists who can and have justified everything in the name of God. The lesson of history is clear. When religion is in control, watch out. Anything goes.
And that's the film, Second Look at Religion. That's part two. We're going to hear part three. We just heard some local Madison atheists. And coming up, we will have Annie Laurie Gaylor and her mother, Ann Gaylor, talking about A Second Look at Religion. Stay tuned. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor for Free Thought Radio.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And we've been listening to the film, A Second Look at Religion, produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation in 1980. And it's online, isn't it? You can go to
our... You can go to our YouTube channel, and also under fffrf.org/news, there's a video section, although it's under repair. But so you can actually watch, which might be more pleasant, A Second Look at Religion. And if you do watch, at the very introduction, there's a cameo, kind of an Alfred Hitchcock cameo by my father, Paul Gaylor, pretending to walk into a church and drop his Bible. It's kind of funny.
Pretending to drop his Bible.
Well, it looks pretty successful.
So, yeah, beware of dogma. We're still fighting the same fights we were fighting more than 30 years ago. Now, here is the third and final segment of A Second Look at Religion.
Annie Laurie Gaylor is a recent graduate of the University of Wisconsin in Madison, an award-winning journalist in college. She now is the publisher and editor of a new feminist monthly newspaper. She has been an activist for women's rights since she was in junior high school.
I understand you're a third-generation freethinker. How has that affected you?
I call myself a third-generation freethinker. I feel fortunate that I was brought up in a household free from religion, because I've seen the pain that religion has brought friends of mine when they tried to cut the umbilical cord. Even though I was skeptical about the Bible, I was shocked at what I read about its treatment of women, and I think that it would outrage people who've been brought up to believe the Bible is a good book.
You said women would be outraged? Why would they be, Annie Laurie?
Women would be outraged if they read the Bible because it's one gigantic put-down of women. From the first chapters of Genesis, the Bible establishes that women are unclean, that they're inferior to men, and that men should rule over them. The favored version of creation says that woman is created from man's spare rib, that she's an appendage to man. Women in the Bible are owned by men and can be sold into slavery by men. They can even be sacrificed. We've all read about the story of Abraham, who nearly sacrifices his son Isaac to please God. But how many of us have heard of the story of Jephthah and his daughter, whom he does actually sacrifice? We haven't heard this story because women and their lives in the Bible are not considered important. Women can even be raped with impunity in the Bible.
Is there a particular Bible passage that bothers you the most?
The most grisly passage in the Bible deals with a concubine whose master throws her into a crowd of unruly men in order to save his own skin. She's raped all night long, and then she's found at his doorpost dead the next morning. Instead of mourning her or feeling any guilt for his cowardly act in sacrificing her, the man cuts her up into 12 pieces and starts a war.
the message of the Bible is clear, that she was only a piece of his property, and that if he causes her death, that's all right. The Bible sanctions men to have concubines. Men could also use their bondswomen sexually. Wise King Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines, so that the Bible also allows polygamy. Men could have as many wives as they wanted, but women could only marry one man.
But these things that you've mentioned now have just been the Old Testament. What did Jesus have to say?
Jesus upheld every jot and tittle of the Mosaic Law, which gives provisions for multiple marriage. He tells a parable about 10 virgins all waiting for the same bridegroom, and he doesn't express any disapproval of this at all.
What else does the Bible say about marriage?
The Bible has some grossly unfair rules about marriage. One of the first rules about marriage is that a woman must be a virgin on her wedding night. If she's not, her father and the men of the village are supposed to stone her to death. A man does not need to be a virgin. Another grossly unfair rule is that a man can divorce his wife by just simply handing her a bill of divorcement. She can't protest. She can't herself divorce her husband, even if he's beating her or if there are any other circumstances like that. In the New Testament, Jesus does not do anything to make this inequity better. He says there shall be no divorce unless the woman is an adulteress. If the man's an adulterer, she can't divorce him.
Annie Lloyd, clarify something for me. Just what does the Bible say about abortion?
Ironically, the Bible doesn't say anything about abortion at all. It's totally silent on the subject. Instead, you'll find passages such as, their infants shall be dashed in pieces and their women with child shall be ripped up. This hardly promotes respect for life. There is a church that cites 5 passages in the Bible that it claims are anti-abortion. But the passages are all similar to, behold, I was shapen in iniquity, and in sin did my mother conceive me. This is hardly persuasive. What you will find in the Bible that is ammunition against abortion rights is that women are supposed to suffer when they are pregnant. They're supposed to bring forth children in agony, and this is what promotes the anti-abortion ideology.
Well, what about the other women in the Bible?
Women in the Bible are basically evil. There are only 2 books that are named for women. Ruth, who is the ultimate passive woman, she acts as a doormat in order to win a second husband. And then there's Esther, who's responsible for killing 75,000 people, and that's why she's honored. The only feminist in the Bible is Queen Vashti, who is quickly dethroned when she refuses to subject herself to her husband and display herself before a mob of drunken companions at a dinner. Mm-hmm. This is the only honorable woman in the Bible that I found.
What do you think women should be doing about this sexist book?
I think that women and men should read the Bible so that they have first-hand acquaintanceship with what it says about women. They should judge this book on its merits like any other book, and I think that they'll find that a fair-minded person will not want the Bible to be invoked in any of our laws about women. The Bible has tremendous impact on women's lives today because the Bible teaches that women are inferior, and nearly 40% of the population in America believes that this Bible is literally true word for word. Therefore, fighting the Equal Rights Amendment and equal rights for women in general has become a religious crusade.
Ann Gaylor is the founder and president of the National Freedom From Religion Foundation. And so much is being said today by the born-agains about returning to the religion of the Founding Fathers and the religion of our Constitution. What about that?
The born-agains are confusing history. What they're really talking about is Plymouth Rock and the early 1600s. They're forgetting that the writing of the Constitution was in the 1780s, a whole century and a half later. The Founding Fathers of our government were the people who wrote the Constitution and signed it. And they, for the most part, were not Christians. They were deists. They had seen some very nasty state church entanglement in the colonies, and they wanted no part of it in the new government. They knew about the persecution of Anne Hutchinson and Roger Williams, and they knew about the persecution of the Baptists in Virginia and the Catholics in almost all the colonies, and they wanted to put an end to this. They envisioned a government that was free from religion, and a constitution where people could practice whatever religious beliefs they wanted to. And believing in this, and believing in freedom from religion, they very purposefully and deliberately wrote a godless constitution.
But so many religionists say the Constitution is based on God.
Of course they do. It suits their purposes to say that, or maybe they really haven't read it. But it is a fact that the United States Constitution is a godless document. There is no reference in it to any deity. In fact, the only references to religion in it are exclusionary, such as there should be no religious test for public office. And at the convention where the Constitution was written, there were no prayers, and I think that's important because it shows intent. I think that the Constitution is something that we can all take pride in, and take special pride that we were first among nations to establish the principle of separation of state and church.
At no time in our history has the precious principle of state-church separation been under greater attack than it is now. Religionists are attempting to turn our government into a religious government, a theocracy. Literal belief in the Bible is the war cry of the fundamentalists. They tolerate no criticism, no second look at religion. The Freedom From Religion Foundation wants the American people today to do what the Founding Fathers did, to take that second look at religion, and then to buttress the endangered wall of separation between church and state.
And this is A Second Look at Religion, the 1980 film produced by the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which you can view online at the Freedom From Religion Foundation YouTube site, or if you go to ffrf.org/news/video, and you can see how young Annie Laurie looked and still looks today back in 1980. And we want to thank our producer of today's show, Dave McCann, who engineers and produces and has a lot of good ideas, and our announcer, Buzz Kemper. The show is recorded here in Madison, Wisconsin. If you want to know how to hear our show as a podcast or archives, go to ffrf.org/radio.
And join us at ffrf.org. There's a big donate button, big join button at our website. Become part of this growing movement. And tune in next week for more rational radio and secular broadcasting.
Free Thought Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.